The floor is all yours. Please unmute and take it away.
Well, hey everybody, I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic and I appreciate this. Speaking is, you know, a lot of people are don't like to do that. And I'm one of those, and especially talking about myself, you know, but I'm Tom, I'm an alcoholic. I can say that now. I can say that today. This isn't my first time in the program. This is my second time. I came in. Some things I have to write down because, you know, I'm pretty sure that in my developmental period of my brain, you know, I really kind of heard it. And some things I just can't remember. But I came in the program first when I was 25. That was in 91 I came in. And I stayed for 3 years. I was in a jam. I was in trouble. It wasn't a law thing. It was just a life thing, you know, that I wasn't good at it. And I needed a break. And I needed, felt like I hadn't slept in years, you know. So I knew this fellow who I had no idea he was in the program, but I knew I hadn't seen him for a little while, and his name was Warren, and I was with him, and I was worked with him in the restaurant business. I've been in the restaurant business most of my life, and I just always liked Warren, and I trusted Warren enough to tell him something that I've been hanging on to. And well, I was in a jam, and I think I might have a problem, but not with alcohol, but with drugs. And I said, I think I might need some help. And he said, man, I know just the person you need to talk to. His name is James. He works at this facility, works at this place called the Friary, and he's a counselor. And man, you can ask him anything. And I thought that was a great idea because, like, if you want to go to somebody's house, you just go to their house and you go up to the front door and you knock on the front door. Here I am. I would go about a block down the road and I would jump over about five fences through people's backyards, and I'd come around through the bushes and I'd come around into the back door. Yeah, that's just the way I did things. You know, so I thought that was a good idea because I could talk to this fellow without actually going to this facility, you know. So he said, meet me at this place tomorrow at noon, and I'll introduce you to him. He'll be there. And what it was an AA meeting, but he didn't tell me that part. And so I met him, and I kept looking for James. Every man I would see, I would say, is that him? Is that him? No, that's not him. He's not out here. Let's go inside. Maybe he's already here. So we went inside. Is that him? Is that him? Every guy I saw, I asked him, and he said, maybe he's running late. Let's just sit down, you know. He was so gentle with me. He said, I still didn't know what I was getting into. Somebody would walk in, and I would look at him, and he just said, just. And the meeting started. And when it started is when I felt that feeling, you know, that feeling for the first time in a long time. Every person that spoke in there, their name might as well have been James, you know. James wasn't there, but James was there. Every person that spoke, I would be like, what did he say? What did she say? I understood that. I didn't understand that. I'm like, stay away from that one. I understand her. And it got to me, and I said, because I kept hearing everybody say, you know, I'm an alcoholic. My name is. So all I could get out was, I'm Tom. And everybody just, it's like they were standing over me with bullhorns and screaming, hey, Tom, hey, Tom, keep coming back. Thanks for being here. I didn't understand it. Why are these people screaming at me? Everybody was screaming. And that's all I said. And it went on. And then in the end, they asked if anyone wanted to speak, and somehow I raised my hand and I said, I'm Tom. And they, again, the bullhorns, Tom. And I said, I think I might maybe have a problem. Yay, Tom. Yeah. Keep coming back. And at the end of this meeting, this AA meeting, you know, at the end of a football game, when the winning team lifts the coach up and, you know, lifts the coach up, and he's just like, oh, I haven't been up here, you know, don't drop me. That's how I felt. That's how I felt. You know, they lifted me up. And then they asked me if I wanted to go to lunch. And I said, okay. And as we were walking to Warren's car, I said, Warren, I don't have any money. He's like, don't worry about it. We got you. So I went to lunch with these guys, and they were just all smiling and laughing and telling jokes, and they were just happy. And then there was me sitting there, this, you know, empty vessel, you know. If I were to smile, my face would just crack. And I swear it was like a beginning of a joke, you know. In the bar walks the lawyer. There sat the lawyer, the priest, the school teacher, Warren, next to me, the guy who drove a cab, and did I say the lawyer? The lawyer, and it just, they were all laughing and smiling, and they just said, keep coming back, and we finished lunch, and I didn't get a chip that day because alcohol wasn't my problem, you know? But they had told me about this NA meeting, Narcotics Anonymous. And they told me where it was. And I thought I knew about where it was and what time it was. And it was that same night. And I had this pocket full of numbers, you know, these telephone numbers of all these men. So I went home. I went home to nothing. I mean, a little dinky apartment, one bedroom, no food in the. There was like four beers in the fridge somehow, nothing else, but there was always that. And the clock was ticking, you know? And as it ticked by, I said, well, I better start making some calls. And I called those numbers. I was about to lose my phone, but I still had a phone, and I called those numbers. Answer machine, no answer. Answer, but they don't do NA, but who else is on your list? Call them. If it doesn't work out, let me know. We'll figure something out. You know, and I went down and there was no one. And I didn't call that last guy back, that other guy that told me to call him back. I called a taxi service. After I had, I didn't have any money. So I went through the closet and I went through every shirt, every pair of pants, anything I could find. I found $5, a $5 bill. And I called the taxi. And when the taxi got there, I just handed him the $5. And I said, this is where I need to go. I don't have money to tip you. I probably don't even have enough money to get there. But here it is. He said, where are you going? And I told him. And he said, get in. I got in. I sat in the front with him, this black fellow. And he started talking. He was a talker. And why are you going to the hospital? It was at a hospital where the meeting was, Baptist Hospital. Why do you need to go to the hospital? You hurt? Well, you know, no. Yeah, you're going to see somebody? No. I'm going to this NA meeting. NA, what's that? Narcotics Anonymous meeting. He's like, oh, man. Me and my friends back in the day, we had... He was telling me about this Sunday barbecue they had, and they were smoking grass, and there was so much weed. We had so much weed. We put some on the barbecue grill and all got under a bed sheet. And I'm just like, yeah, yeah, just get me there, you know, just get me there. And that I was watching the meter turn, you know, because all I had was $5. And it was like we were crashing like in a plane, like at 50,000 feet, and that was just spinning. and my money was just getting eaten up. And we went, took a left on Cervantes. This was in Pensacola, Florida. And we made it to where there's a big neon sign. It's a drugstore. It said drugs, RX. And then on this side, there's a liquor store. And you take a right there and you go up the hill. And we made it up the hill and I could see the hospital. And he got me pretty close and I had to walk through this retention pond, but not a pond. It didn't have water in it, just this retention area over these change. And I saw these group of people. I didn't know where it was, but I saw a group of people and I went towards them and that was it. And I went in. I had no idea what was talked about, but I did pick up a chip because I had this thing in my head. If I just need to get this chip, this NA chip, this chip. I saw a couple people get one in that AA meeting. If I can just get this chip, everything's going to be all right. If I just get this chip. So I got the chip and nothing was all right. You know, it didn't feel all right. I got this chip and the magical thing happened. So I had to get back home and I started asking guys, you know, which way are you going? And finally, these two guys said, yeah, I'll give you a ride. And I jumped in their truck. I didn't even have a car, you know. And we go out to the parking lot and I'm looking at these guys' car, this piece of crap Toyota pickup full of lawn equipment and stuff. And it smelled like diesel. And I'm thinking to myself, you want me to get in this? I mean, I don't even have my own car and I'm judging their car.
You muted yourself, Tom.
And then I finished off that 4 or 5 beers in the fridge. Anyway, I don't want to talk about... I'm going to do a chunkalog. You know, we've all got one. We know what it was like. We all know what it was like. Yeah, and it was like that for me. I just want you to know that the first time I was in AA, I was just catching my breath. That's all I was doing. I was catching my breath. That's all I was doing. I mean, there were good people, good, sweet people. I made good friends in there. I got my bearings. I didn't drink and I didn't use. I did not do that. But that's all I did not do. You know, that's all I didn't do. That's all I didn't do right. That's all I did not, you know, right. I didn't drink and I didn't use, but I didn't open Big Book. I didn't work any steps. I didn't do any of that. So I lost, you know. In 3 years, I stepped away. And the easiest thing to do in AA, I know this for a fact, the easiest thing to do in here is to step away. I was sitting in my piece of crap car, hand me down, and I was in front of the meeting, and I was watching all my friends go in, and the engine was still running. I'd already decided. I had decided a long time ago, you know, that I wasn't going. And I just put it in reverse, and I just eased away. I didn't peel out. I just eased away and I never looked back. But there's a problem there because once you've had a little taste of AA, you know, it's, you can push it down and push it down, but it always like, it's just there, you know? So like I said, my problem was drugs, not drinking. But I said I was a addict and an alcoholic. I said addict first and alcoholic second. And I said alcoholic so they wouldn't kick me out. And a lot of people didn't like that addict business, you know, in AA, but this was 30 years ago or. I was what you call a dry drunk. Never knew what that was until I did. And then I compare it to like You know, the cowboy that is in the rodeo that rides the bull. He gets on the bull and he nods his head and the chute opens and 7 seconds, just stay on 7 seconds. But me, that's what it was like. A dry drunk, not using. I was the cowboy on the bull, but it was in slow motion. You know, slow motion for 3 years. It was painful. So I got high and I drank. You know, it didn't work. And then 25 years later, I find myself back, you know. But this time is different. And a lot of stuff happened in between, you know. That guy, James, I finally met and we became friends. And, you know, he was one of the last people I saw walking into that meeting when I put it in reverse and eased away. I never said goodbye. I never said thank you to these guys, to these women. I never said thank you. I never said I appreciate what y'all did for me. I'm going to be okay. I just disappeared. It's the easiest thing to do in AA is just step away, disappear. So this time I'm not stepping away. I'm not disappearing. You know, this Men Who Trudge group, I didn't have much of a... I had a father, I had a mother, I had a good family growing up, folks divorced. But my dad was the type, you know, his daddy never told him, I love you or good job. And so he never told me that, you know, he just didn't know what he didn't know, I guess. And but in here, a lot of you are somewhat agent, got nothing to do with it, you know, father figure. Like, and I didn't think you guys were real. Not that you were like an AI creation of some sort, but it was, how can this be? This group, these older folk, my dad can never say what y'all are saying. My dad never said that. I didn't know people who said what y'all say. So that's why I came up there. You know, that I've been up twice to Buffalo. And to the Danny's pasture. And I wanted to see if y'all were real, you know, in this my twisted thinking kind of way. And turns out you are, you know, you are. Honest, sincere, human. You ain't perfect. You know, the difference is you just, you say it, you know, you don't keep it in, you say it, you say what you're thinking, feeling, hurting, and I respect that, and that shows me that, you know, it's okay for me to do that. AA is different for me this time. I ended up going to that facility, the Friary. It was many years later, you know. I've got 5 years. I got 5 years yesterday. I wrote this down. I went to that facility on July 6th, 2019. I was 53 then. I'm 58 now. So that's a good 25 years that I stayed away from AA, NA, James, Warren, any of those people, any of those good friends I made in AA. But for the longest time, I carried that fella James around, like almost like carried him around in my pocket, you know? And I said, things get hard enough, I know where to go. I'll go see James, you know? That same fella, I'll go see James at the Ferrari. I'll go see James. So things would get better and I'd forget about it. And then things would get tight and I would think about him. And I'd say, no, no, no. You know, just as long as I didn't say I was an alcoholic, I knew I was. I mean, I got to know alcohol. I got to know it. And that, but if you push it down hard enough, you know, alcohol is the only thing I know of. You know, when you die, well, nobody knows when you die because when you die and you don't know what happens. But do you know that alcohol, it can die and you can bury it and you dig a big old hole, deep, deep hole, and you stick it down in there and you bury it and you pack it, cover it up. And that's the only thing I know of that will come back to life. You know, it'll start small and it'll grow and it'll vine around your ankle and it'll come on up. And the next thing you know, it's comfortably wrapped around you. And there it is, alcohol. It will come back to life if I don't do what I know I need to do, what you tell me I need to do, what you say that might be a good idea if I do. So I went to this friary looking for James. This was like many, many years later. You know, I hadn't been in contact with anybody, but James, I had this in my head. James, I'm going to go see James. It's going to be all right. It's going to make everything better. And I took one last big swig of Jose Cuervo and I got in my truck. I left my phone. I told my wife, this is where I'm going. She said, you're going where? I'm like, this is where I'm going. I packed my little backpack bag. I even shaved. And I went and I drove. It was important for me to go by myself. And I left my phone. You know? So this hour and a half drive to this place west of me took like 3.5 hours to get there because I turned around a couple of times. I banged on the steering wheel. I screamed. I cried. I didn't want to go. I wanted to go. I wanted to go. I didn't want to go. I got lost. I couldn't find the sign. Where's the sign? The sign's supposed to be right there. It wasn't there. They had moved it. I ended up stopping a couple times asking, like, do y'all know where the friary is? The friary? I'm like, yeah. And I said, I need to find the friary. And then I'm like, I'm going to get in trouble, man, asking these people where the friary is. And then I started asking, I'm meeting someone at the friary. I'm picking someone up at the friary, a friend. Do you know where the friary is? You know, I didn't want to get it. Anyway, I finally stopped at this convenience store and I asked the woman, can I use your phone? And I called my wife and I said, I can't find it. I can't find the place. Can you help me find it? And she mapped it and she said, where are you? And she said, you're so close, you're right there, go like 100 feet and it's turn right. And so I did and went back a ways and there it was, and I parked in the parking lot. I was in the right spot and I said, I sat there and sat there and sat there, and then I finally went in and I said, they said, Tom. And I said, oh my God, they know who I am. She said, we were waiting on you. We've been waiting on you. I thought in my twisted trunk thinking, I'm like, they're waiting on me. They've been waiting on me. Well, my wife had called about 15 times, you know, even sent her sister there looking for me. He's not there yet. He's not there. Anyway, I got in and I keep asking people, do you know James? Do you know James? I think he's working today or I don't know James. And so I make it back to the facility and every person I see, I'm like, do you know where James is? Do you know where James is? Oh, I think he's off today. Or it was kind of like that Warren moment. They were just trying to do whatever they could do to get me in there and get me behind the big iron gate, you know? And I was in detox and it was on, I think it was day two, I think. And this woman popped her head in. I never saw her. I just heard her. She said, while you're in detox, it's not required that you go to a meeting, but we'd love to have you. We're about to have a meeting here in about 5 minutes. And I just said, okay. I said, okay. And she left. And it took me forever, man. It took me forever just to get my shoes on. I was shaking. I mean, every fiber in my body wondered where alcohol was. And I never want to feel that again. And I walked my way to where the meeting was, you know, in the place. And it took me forever to get there, holding on to the wall. I'd hold on to the wall. I'd run out of wall, and I'd go from chair to chair. Then there was a couch. Ran out of couch, and I made my way to the other couch. And finally made my way to the door. And the door weighed 1 million pounds, you know. I went in, and the meeting was well underway. And the only place to sit was right up front next to the guy talking. So I took a breath, and I just went, and I sat, and I sat in this chair in my bony ass, you know, this old hardwood chair. And I heard all over, and I was sitting there twitching, and this guy, this black fellow, this gentle, black, gentle man, you know, was standing there talking. His name is Waddell. And the only thing I really ever heard him say was that he had been there, like, close to 25 years. And then I heard that and finally somebody that's going to know James, you know, I need to know where James is. And the meeting was over, and I said to him, I need to ask you something. Before that happened, before he finished, I was sitting there twitching, and two times he leaned to me, like in me and him, just him talking to me. He said, it's going to be okay. You're okay. You're all right. You know, he was trying to comfort me. And when he was done, everybody cleared out, and it was just he and I. And I said, and I asked him, I said, I need to know something. I need to know where James is. James works here. I need James. Where's James? And he gave me this look. And he said, James is working. James is helping people in another place. And I said, well, I need to know where James is, because this isn't going to work. I came a long way, and I'm here. Where is he working now? Because that's where I need to be. And this man, Waddell, said something to me that made all the difference in the world. It was like a tectonic shift, you know, this fracture that just like happened. And he said, James isn't here any longer. James died. And I said, died. And he could see the confusion, and he could see, and I was about to melt off the chair and into the floor and just puddle, you know, in this. But before I did that, he said, but do you know what? Do you know how I know James is still helping people? Like, you know, I don't know. He said, he got you here, didn't he? He got you here. And that, what he said to me there, to me, I feel, was a spiritual experience. You know, I never had God. I never had church. I was never asked to pray. I was never made to go to Sunday school. But that, what he said to me, made me stop, look, listen to me. You know, it was like, this whole time I've been kicking myself. What are your parents, what's your mom going to think? What are your brothers going to think? You're in this facility. It's your second time in one of these places. You know, you piece of shit. Can't you get it? Why can't you get it? But when he said what he said, all that evaporated. It just disappeared. It disappeared. I still hurt. My ass was still bony in that chair, and I still hurt like a... But this, it's like a door opened just a little bit, and this warmth came over me like a flood, like a... like your Niagara up there came over me. And it gave me that same feeling that I had in that first meeting I went to when they lifted me up. And from then on, I haven't looked back. I mean, I've looked back, but not in the same way, you know. I started being responsible. I started taking responsibility. And it's made all the difference in the world, being responsible for me. I mean, I get a lot of help, lots. From you, other groups, home group, this group. And, you know, I can't say enough about that experience, what happened. And I would go down to this dock. The place was beautiful, old oaks and Spanish moss. Awesome, beautiful grounds. I mean, it wasn't fancy. The grounds were fancy, but the place was a piece of crap. And there was this dock down there on the water. And I would go to that dock every morning. I finally got out of detox. I went in my own. I got my own room. I paid for extra for my own room because I didn't like roommates. And I needed the space. I needed no distractions. I needed to focus. I kept a journal. Would keep the journal for the week, and then I'd mail it overnight to my wife so she could read it, because on Fridays we had a family day and she would come and be able to sit all day and go through all the whole what I experienced during the each day on that day, eat with each other, you know, at the same table and sit and see what I saw, and I'd give her a heads up on the reading, you know, what I was going through. I was trying to help her. And it did. Once we were sitting there eating, and all these people, you know, that had gotten to know me were saying, God, Tom's great. Tom's wonderful. You know, Tom is just so, so helpful. And she's finally, she just had heard enough. And she said, you know what? She said, I appreciate what you're saying. But that guy you're talking about, I haven't seen him for a long time. So, you know, and that ended that. So it is true. You know, I don't know how we find the women that we find. But at 4 years, I got out of there. And well, this doc I went to, I'm sorry. There's so much. And I don't know how to tell you everything. Without telling you everything, and I can't tell you everything because there's not enough time. But this doc that I went to, I had it all to myself because no one got up that early. I hadn't gotten up that early. I was watching the sunrise. I was watching. This spot was special to me because I could only handle so much, and everything was coming at me in slow motion. Like you could see the rain coming before the rain got to you. And then you'd feel it. I'd feel it. And then you could see the wind coming on the water, slow motion. And it hit me. It's like everything was in slow motion. I was seeing color. I was feeling things on this dock. And it was all in slow motion. You know, this guy would come by catching bait with his cast net. All I'd hear was shoo, 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 shoo. It was just... This dock's magical, and I came alive there. And one of the couple nights before I left that place, we went to a meeting, and, you know, I spoke, and I said, I'm scared, you know, I'm getting out, and I'm scared going to the real world. And I got back to the facility and they gave me a P test, and the guy, the counselor, the driver of the bus, and he said, what did you mean you were scared? And I said, well, I'm scared, man. I've got to get back into the real world. And he said, he was trying to be, you know, like all positive with Bill. And he said, how'd you get here? I told him about James. I said, James, did you know James? I didn't know James. He said, and I said, well, that's why I came here. I met him way back when, and I came here and I found out he had passed. And this woman was sitting in this chair in that office. She worked the night shift. She never said a word. Probably why she worked the night shift, because she didn't like to say words. And she turned around in that chair after I told my little bit about James. And she turned around in the chair and she said, I know James. She said, I worked with James, you know. And she said, I went to James's funeral. I used to live with James. My husband and I lived with James. He let us stay in a room for like 2 years of his house. So we saved enough money and bought our own house. And I have some of James's ashes on my mantle, she said. I'm like, oh my God. I have some of James's ashes. His partner has some of his ashes. His parents have some of his ashes. And she said, but the other ashes, the other part of James, when James worked here, she said, if ever he was having lunch or just taking a break or just, you know, catching a moment to himself, he would always be in his favorite spot. And he was down at the dock. That was his place to go, was the dock. So we had a celebration for James when he passed, and we took some of his ashes and we took it down to the dock and we spread his ashes in the water. You know, this is a couple nights before I was leaving. She never said a word to me. And you know, that dock was what it was to me. And you know why I know he's still helping people? He got you here, didn't he? It's kind of like a higher power. And in fact, I call him my higher power, James. I call him my higher power, James. James was a real person. He's dead now. He helped me tremendously. James was gay. I mean, I didn't choose that. He just was. But it's like a higher power, isn't it? Isn't that what y'all say? You know, it's like find a higher power. Well, I carried him around in my pocket, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, you know. I carried him around with me. He was there with me when I pushed him away, when I didn't want to say that I was an alcoholic, when I didn't want to ask for help. He showed me there. He got me there. You know, isn't that what y'all say? And that, so I call James my higher power. And say that for now, because it works for me. Maybe that'll change. Maybe, you know, maybe it won't. But that's what works for me, as far as the higher power goes. And I know it seems like I'm running out of time, but I got out of there and I found a home group, you know. Everybody kept saying, we would have these outside meetings and they would say, where are you going? And I said, Santa Rosa Beach, you know, Sea Grove Beach. I'm going to Santa Rosa Beach down the road. And they said, oh, you need to go to the Camel Club. They kept saying Camel Club, Camel Club, Camel Club. Ooh, there's this place down there, Camel Club. You need to check it out. So I said, well, shit, I better go to the Camel Club. So that was the first stop when I left that place. That was the first. I didn't trust myself at all. Well, I did trust myself, but I did. So that was the first place I went, was the Camel Club. That's where I met John D. That's where I met eventually Jim Kay and Savage, a lot of good people that I know. And then they turned me on to this. And it's like one island. You get to one island and go to another island and go to another island. And then pretty soon you're surrounded all by all these islands. And it's like, yeah. I've been to AA twice. And this time it's different. And it's different because, and it's working because I'm working it. If I'm in here and I'm not working it, if I don't have a home group, if I don't have a sponsor, if I don't have a service commitment, if I don't know what step I'm working on, you know, if I don't know those things, if I don't know my sobriety date, then I am in trouble. As long as I know those things and the other things that I know in my head that I don't want anybody to know, I'll let my sponsor know. Eventually, I can let others know. Then I don't have to drink. And not drinking, it's so sweet to not. I had to. You know, if you're here, you know, I had to drink. And now I don't have to. And that's just, I rode that for the longest time. And I still ride it, you know, like riding that bull, but it's a sweet bull. You know, it's like I ride that not having to drink feeling. And it's just so wonderful. It's such a chore. It's like going to the shittiest job you've ever worked, having to drink. And I don't have to go to that job anymore. But it ain't free. Nothing's free in the world, you know? So I know I went everywhere and I just, there'll be time where I can tell you everything and you can tell me everything and, you know, but for now, that's it. And I just want y'all to know that you make AA not scary, but you also make it scary as a mother effer. But even when that happens, I see that you can do it, so I can do it, you know, and hopefully I can help others do it. So I really, really, really appreciate everybody here, you know. I truly do. Man, I really do. Thanks.